सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावतीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। We'll chant verses 54 to 58, chapter 2. 54 to 58, chapter 2, page 128. Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna uvacha, stita prajnasya ka bhasha, stita prajnasya ka bhasha, समाधिस्तस्य केशव समाधिस्तस्य केशव स्थितभि किं प्रभाषेत स्थितभि किं प्रभाषेत किमासीतव्रचेत किम् अर्जुन उवाच स्थितप्रज्ञस्य का भाषा समाधिस्तस्य केशव स्थितभि किं प्रभाषेत किमासीतव्रचेत किम् श्री भगवानुवाच प्रजहाति यदा कामान सर्वान् पार्थ मनोगतान आत्मन्येवात्मना तुष्टः स्थितप्रज्ञस्तभुच्यते। श्रीभगवानुवाच प्रजहाति यदा कामान् सर्वान् पार्थ मनोगतान् आत्मन्येवात्मना तुष्टः स्थितप्रज्ञस्तभुच्यते। दुःखेष्वनुद्विग्नमनाः सुखेषु विगतस्पृहः वीतरागभयक्रोधः स्थितभिर्मुनिरुच्यते। दुःखेष्वनुद्विग्नमनाः सुखेषु विगतस्पृहः वीतरागभयक्रोधः स्थितभिर्मुनिरुच्यते। यः सर्वत्राणभिस्नेहः तत्तत्प्राप्य शुभाशुभम् नाभिनन्दति न द्वेष्टि तस्य प्रज्ञा प्रतिष्ठिता। यः सर्वत्राणभिस्नेहः तत्तत्प्राप्य शुभाशुभम् नाभिनन्दति न द्वेष्टि तस्य प्रज्ञा प्रतिष्ठिता। यदा संहरते चायं कूर्मोङ्गाणीव सर्वशः इन्द्रियाणीन्द्रियार्तेभ्यः तस्य प्रज्ञा प्रतिष्ठिता। यदा संहरते चायं कूर्मोङ्गाणीव सर्वशः इन्द्रियाणीन्द्रियार्तेभ्यः तस्य प्रज्ञा प्रतिष्ठिता। From verse 54 of this chapter onwards, the new portion called the Sthita Prajna begins. Here Arjuna asks Lord Krishna to describe a man of perfection, one who has attained the state of steady wisdom. Sthita Prajna means Sthira Prajna, one whose wisdom is steady, established in reality, whose mind is tranquil. Now, until now, the thought flow has been, in the very first chapter, Arjuna succumbed to his emotions and he didn't realize that he had succumbed to his emotions, and he was justifying bringing his head, whatever stance he had taken. And then Krishna was not accepting what Arjuna was saying. It was very evident in the second chapter beginning. And then Arjuna reflected a bit and then he understood that his emotions has overpowered him. And he surrendered to Krishna and became a disciple. And then he became available. When he became a Shishya and said, "You are my guru," to Krishna, then Krishna started giving the knowledge of Atma, Atma Jnanam, from verse number 11. Who are you? What is your original nature? The body, mind, intellect keeps on changing. You are not the body, you are not the mind, you are not the intellect, you are the Atman. Atman is beginningless, Atman has no death, Atman has no birth, etc., etc. He spoke about in detail. And then he shifted the gear a little bit from 25 verse 26 onwards in second chapter, where he said, even if you think you are, like I said, remember the three C's, the container, the content, and the consciousness. You are not the container. The container is given away when the person dies, but the content gets transferred from this body to the new body. Consciousness remains the same in this body, in the new body, and it never is born, never dies, and you are that consciousness. So in 26 onwards he says, even if you think you are the content, then also there is no problem, because you keep on existing in different bodies. Where is the problem? And then further, if you look at it from your duty point of view, he says from 31, you being a Kshatriya Arjuna, your duty is to fight the battle, not to take any personal angle. You are not in this battlefield from any personal angle. You are supposed to look at it from the duty point of view. And if you look at it from the duty point of view, for a Kshatriya, the righteous war is what everybody is waiting for. And it has, you are not a warmonger, it was thrust on you. You try to avoid the war, but Duryodhana wouldn't listen. And when such an unsought battle comes, you just do your duty, and that will give you heaven, happiness now, and happiness always. And then, having said this, he shifted the gear further to the side of Karma Yoga, because having given the knowledge, Arjuna is not that introverted person for him to get into the deeper inquiry. And the mind needs to be prepared and turn introvert, then it can get into deeper inquiry. And for the mind to turn introvert, we need to drop the bulk of our desires. We need to rise above our desires. Therefore, Krishna introduces Karma Yoga, which he calls as Buddhi Yoga, whereas, which I said, is nothing but action done with total awareness and right attitude. That is Karma Yoga. So what is Karma Yoga? Karma Yoga is nothing but right action underlined by awareness coupled with right attitude. That is Karma Yoga. By performing Karma Yoga, you drop the bulk of your desires, and then you will be able to do more of self-inquiry. So that's why I've given you this diagram here, which we call as the path to self, where in the beginning you do Karma Bhakti Jnana Yoga. You use your body and do Karma Yoga, mind and do Bhakti Yoga, and intellect and do Jnana Yoga, according to your proportion. But in the beginning, when you have too much desires, when you have too many desires, you'll be doing more of Karma Yoga, less of Bhakti Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And our study and reflection is probably what you will do more than, you know, doing 2 or 3 hours or 3-4 sessions in a day. You can't do too much of self-inquiry. You have too many desires. So you get into more of Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga, then the proportion changes as you become subtle, as you become introverted. Your mind is withdrawn. You go into a state called Uparati. Uparati means mental withdrawal. Today the mind is preoccupied with so many things in the world. You have to rise above that. You can't deny them to you. By denying, nothing happens to you. That is why they have divided life into 4 parts. The first stage was called as Brahmacharya Ashrama. In Brahmacharya Ashrama, it's a student's life where you keep on gaining knowledge. You don't have to worry about where your food comes, your meal comes, your clothing comes. Everything is being provided by the parents and society. You are continuously taking. It's a stage where you stabilize yourself. It's a stage where you strengthen yourself. It's a process of strengthening. And then, having got the knowledge, doesn't mean you straight away are able to do give up the world and concentrate too much on the self. So what are you supposed to do? You are supposed to get into Grahastha Ashrama, means you legitimately give directions to your desires and you rise above them. Having risen above that, your mind is not preoccupied anymore with it. Now you get on to the next stage called Vanaprastha, where you are not preoccupied, your mind is slowly going towards the higher aspects. So Brahmacharya Ashrama is called as stage of strengthening, Grahastha Ashrama is called as stage of contributing. You are supposed to be giving, investing your talent for the welfare of the world. That is what Grahastha Ashrama is. Thus you slowly rise above the...
You are contributing.
Yeah. See, you have been taking from the time you are born till you finish your education. Maybe 21, 25, 30, whatever it is. Like a coconut tree goes on taking for about 4 to 5 years. And after that it only gives and gives and gives. You can only give what you have. So you need to strengthen yourself fully through educational process. And having strengthened yourself, now it's time to give. But today, why when people get into Grahastha Ashrama, they start getting stressed? Because their attitude is not of giving, it is of taking. I have certain talents, I have certain skills. Now using this, how I can benefit? If this is the thought, you are not in Grahastha Ashrama, you are in Grahastha Avastha. So, Grahastha Ashrama is nothing but stage of contributing, stage of giving, investing all that you have for the welfare of the world. Like we sing in the bhajan, Tera tujhko arpan, kya lage mera. And thus you rise above your desires. You will also fulfill your desires and you will slowly rise above your desires. And then the next stage is Vanaprastha, which is nothing but stage of simple living with high thoughts. Where you keep minimum requirements, but your focus and everything is into self-inquiry, studying, reflection. But little bit, you are still in the world, not that much though. Then you progress further to the next stage, which is called as sannyasa, which means a stage of maturity or a stage of contemplation, where you have nothing to do with the world, you have renounced the ego completely, and you take up a new name. That's why you find people who take up sannyas, the name comes with some ananda attached to it. Chinmayananda means they have detached completely from this little self and they have given their life dedicated totally for self-realization.
What is the difference between a guru name, Guruji, and then this name? I mean, that comes earlier, is it? Sometimes when you have diksha from a guru, they give you another name also. Now the guru gives you a name.
Yeah, but that's not, you have not taken up. If you are talking about diksha in terms of taking sannyas.
No, diksha in terms of when you go to a guru, they give you a diksha and they give you another name.
Yeah, but that is, they'll call you a Chaitanya or something.
They make you take certain promises that you will not do this. Uh-huh. I have not taken one.
I've not taken, but I've heard of, you know, I've got diksha from this guru.
Basically, they're trying to tell you that you will rise above.
It's basically initiation. Diksha means initiation. You are initiated into a new dimension, higher dimension. So you are given a new name for that. But here, when a sannyasi takes up this name, it indicates that he has totally detached himself from the ego and egoistic way of living and is now dedicated for the self-inquiry and self-realization only. His mind is matured. It's a stage of contemplation. So you, through karma yoga, bhakti yoga, jnana yoga, you dissolve the bulk of your desires and come to the state called uparati, mental withdrawal. It's not just physical withdrawal, mental withdrawal. Physical withdrawal beyond your capacity leads to frustration, repression, suppression. The physical withdrawal has to be supplemented with knowledge, higher knowledge. And slowly what happens over a period of time, your mind itself withdraws, risen above it. And then that stage is called as Uparati. And there onwards you can concentrate, you get in further more concentrated effort towards progressing towards the self. And that stage is called as dharana. And then that concentration further leads you to dhyana, which is meditation, which is single-pointed concentration on the truth. And through dhyana, you realize the self within, which is called as jnanam. You attain the jnanam and you become a sthita prajna. So now, in the last two verses, 52 and 53, he talks about this. He says, Yada te moha kalilam buddhir vyatitarishyati tada gantasi nirvedam shrotavyasya shrutasya cha shrutirim pratipannate yada syasyati nishyala. samadhavachala buddhi tada yogam avapsyasi. When your intellect will cross the mire of delusion, then you will grow indifferent to what has been heard and what is yet to be heard. When your intellect perplexed by what has been heard shall stand immovable and steady in meditation, then you will attain yoga. What he is trying to say here is, you might be exposed to the Shruti, means scriptures, Vedas, but you are still an extroverted person. So you might be hearing that there is no pleasure in this world, but still the delusion is not completely gone. You might be inspired, you might be a little convinced when you study, reflect and all, but after a while, when you go in front of the world, what happens? The world takes over. So what is delusion? Delusion means, like I said last week, like something covering the light. When there is no light, you can't see. Your vision is blocked. So when you are deluded by the senses, you can't see, you don't have clarity of vision. Then, since you do not have the clarity, you do not know which direction to go. You lack direction. And since you lack direction and you can't remain in that situation for long, idle, you start moving, and as you start moving this side and that side, you start getting knocks and shocks. This is delusion. So when somebody is deluded by the world, they will be going through knocks and shocks, and they still believe that there is happiness in the outside world. So he says, when you have reflected enough and you have gone deep and your intellect gets, will cross the mire of delusion, means it gains the light within, then it has got the clear understanding that in the external world there is no joy. For example, everybody has not experienced everything in this world. There will always be a situation where you have not experienced many things. So today you may know, probably understood, that there is no happiness in what I have got. Because mind always thinks, till I have not got it, I believe it is there in what I have not got. But once I have got it, then I say, oh, it's not here. Then I think it's in that, it's in that, it's in that. So he says, it turns indifferent to what has been heard and what is yet to be heard. Means, to not only what it has experienced, to something that it has not experienced also. It becomes indifferent. Means it becomes detached. It is risen above. And through Shruti, when the intellect becomes perplexed by deeper reflections, when the intellect crosses over this mire of delusion, it stands immovable. It becomes steady. In other words, our intellect is not that steady. And when we meet once a week and we study, reflect, and probably we are doing the study every day and reflecting, those few moments, a few hours after that, our intellect is steady. Yes, I am not going to get involved in these things, in those things. And just one phone call will come, I will again get dragged and get involved in the happenings of this world. Isn't it? So therefore, we are moving from one involvement to another. People may move from world and go to ashram and they can get involved in an ashram. You can become a you can become a member of a club, you get involved in. And all the more when you have made a some responsibility. So there is involvement possible at every level, because you still, your mind is still extroverted. So he says, when through Shruti, a deeper understanding of Shruti, intellect becomes steady, then it is able to come to single pointed focus meditation, and through meditation it attains yoga. Yoga comes from the root yuj. Yuj means to unite. To unite back to the origin. Like, river has emanated from ocean. What is the source of river? The spring that comes from the earth and the rain that falls from the cloud. Both are coming from ocean only. Ocean's water through the earth comes out as a spring from the earth. Ocean's water that has evaporated due to the sun's heat comes down pouring as rain. So river originates from ocean, and where does it get back? It gets back to the ocean. Similarly, each one of us, Vedanta says, have originated from the self. You are the self. And getting back to the origin is called yoga. That religion also means the same, religare, which means to unite back to the origin. So the goal of life is not the wealth or entertainment or even beauty. Because some people run after wealth, some people run after entertainment. Wealth, they run after to be entertained in life. Some people run after duty, duty, duty. But the goal is to attain the self within, to be aware 24 hours, 365 days. To be, and this is what is called as living. Everything else is called as sleepwalking. So we are born here to live our life totally, not to merely exist here as sleepwalkers. So to get back to the origin is our goal. So he says that is only possible when your intellect gets perplexed by what has been heard from the Shruti. Means by deeper reflections, your intellect has now completely understood that there is no joy in the external world. Even if there is little bit of delusion left in you, again you can get back. Like they say, when a person suffers from tuberculosis, today the tuberculosis has medicine and it can be completely cured, but they will, you know, prescribe medicine for I think 6 months or 1 year, some 9 months, something like that. But in between, if somebody stops it because they feel perfectly alright, it can come back, and relapse is more dangerous. Similarly, even if little bit of delusion is left in you, then something that has not been experienced by you, you can get caught to that. You know? So therefore, when the intellect gets totally convinced and it leaves it, then your mind single-pointedly is dedicated for the pursuit of the self, and through meditation you realize the self. So when he talked about unification with the self and attaining that yoga, now Arjuna is naturally curious to know about a person who has attained that state of yoga, that we call as sthita prajna. Sthita prajna means sthira prajna, which means man of steady wisdom, one who has attained steady wisdom, whose wisdom is not unsteady. Meaning we are very steady in the morning, no alcohol in the evening. In the evening a fellow gives up and gets involved in alcohol. No more overeating, then you fall. Like that, so many resolutions. You are very, very clear in the morning when you take the resolution, but later on when you come in front of the object, you fail. But in the case of sthita prajna, the wisdom remains the same and steady always. The objects and beings of the world cannot do any damage to his wisdom. In other words, the information has brought about an internal transformation. In our case, we are only informed. So this information, what happens? We know. But when we go in front of the object becomes more powerful. In his case, he has attained total transformation. So Arjuna is expressing his curiosity now to know about such a person who's attained such a transformation within. We'll chant verse number 54. Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna uvacha, sthita prajnasya kha bhasha, sthita prajnasya kha bhasha, samadhistasya keshava,
samadhistasya
keshava, sthitari kim prabhasheta, sthitari kim prabhasheta, kimasita vrajeta kim, kimasita vrajeta kim. Arjuna uvacha, sthita prajnasya kha bhasha, samadhistasya keshava, sthitari kim prabhasheta, kimasita vrajeta kim. Arjuna uvacha means Arjuna said to Krishna. Remember, Bhagavad Gita is a conversation between Arjuna and Krishna, the disciple and the guru. You only learn through questioning. You dig deep and you go and educate yourself. Educate means to eke out, to draw out. And the tool that you have to dig is questioning. not by cramming, it's by questioning why, what, when, where, how, which, etc. So Krishna gave Arjuna total freedom to express himself whenever he wanted and clarify. Now Arjuna is asking, what is the description of one of steady wisdom? Sthita prajnyasya kha bhasha. Describe one with steady wisdom who has merged in the super conscious state of Keshava. O Krishna, please describe a man of steady wisdom, sthita prajna. Samadhista means one whose mind is tranquil, one whose mind is absolutely balanced and calm, serene. How does one of steady wisdom speak? Sthitadi kim prabhasheta. Sthitadi means one whose wisdom is steady, one whose wisdom is established in reality, truth. How does he speak? Sthita prajnasya kha bhasha samadhistasya keshava sthitadi kim prabhasheta. How does he speak? Kim asita means how does he sit. Vrajeta kim means how does he walk. Now what is he saying? He is asking totally four questions here. Basically what he is asking, one question is, describe the nature of a sthita prajna. General description of a sthita prajna, man of steady wisdom. Then how does he speak? How does he speak means what? How does one who has attained the infinity express through the finite? See, remember this, all of us according to Vedanta are essentially divine. Siddha Prajna is one who has got that enlightenment that he is divine. We don't have that enlightenment, but we are divine. So therefore, out of this ignorance of our original nature, there is a sense of incompleteness in us. This sense of incompleteness brings about the desire to feel complete. So our thoughts run towards the external world and we try to attain those objects and fulfill ourselves. But the more we fulfill, the more we want, we never are satiated. So we believe we are finite, but Siddha Prajna is one who has discovered, he has discovered the self. And a man who has discovered the self and understood that he is infinite, how does the infinite express through the finite equipments of the body, mind and intellect? How does he speak? That's what it means. How does he sit? How does he sit means what? When you are by yourself, what is the condition of your mind? What is his inner nature? What is the state of mind, inner nature of man who has attained perfection? Then kim vrajeta, how does he walk? How does he walk means, when he contacts the world, how does he react? So one is general description of a man of perfection, other one is how does the infinite express through the finite, then the third one is what is his mental nature within, his inner personality, inner nature, and how does he react when he contacts the world. Your speech is nothing but expression of your thought. How does the within express through the without in the case of man of perfection, and how does he react when the without he comes in contact with? Are you with me? How does the within express through the equipments is one question. The other question is, when he comes in contact with the without, what are his reactions? And then even when he is not contacting the world or expressing his thoughts, what is the nature of his inner personality? So it's a total complete question that Arjuna is asking. So define a man of perfection. Now what we need to understand here, this question is asked in the midst of a battlefield, isn't it? In fact, many of us don't wake up till the crisis comes. So either way, pain is a blessing. In a cancerous patient, the person who's got cancer, the cancer patient, not cancerous patient, in a cancer patient, there is no pain for a long time. He doesn't realize. By the time the pain starts happening, it's probably too late. So, pain, how much ever we may say, oh, it's too much to bear and all that, it's a blessing. Isn't it? So, crisis moment, the question comes is, what is my, how does one, he's talking about sthita prajna. Basically, in other words, he's showing interest in getting to the self. Now, he might not be asking seriously, but the crisis moment has pushed him to this question. Even though the question may not be very much relevant in the context, because he has to stand up and fight, but still it gives us some sort of satisfaction because his intellect has woken up from the emotional stupor that he had, you know, he was in that such an emotional condition. From that condition he had now little bit trace of intellect is shown. So he is asking questions. So Krishna answers these four questions. In fact, from this portion we call, as I said, it's called a sthita prajna portion. People who comment on the Gita, even Adi Shankara commented the Gita only from the 11th verse of chapter 2. The first chapter commentary is not there. It's just given a general commentary for the entire first chapter and the first 10 verses of chapter 2. Then from 11 onwards he starts. Even when Swamiji gives public lecture, his public lecture starts from the 11th verse of chapter 2. So when Swamiji gives the lecture, second chapter he does in two parts. First part lecture will be from verse 11 to 53. The second part lecture will be from 54 to 72. So in that sense we are entering into the second part of chapter 2 called as sthita prajna. So these 18 verses is painting, Lord Krishna is painting the picture of a perfect human being. And when we study about perfect human being, the interesting thing that we need to note is the state. It is both the state as well as practice. In the sense, we aspire to become perfect, so we try to imbibe these qualities. So it is both the state as well as sadhana. So it is not just talking about somebody who has reached the state. It's not only talking about the state, it's talking about the sadhana as well. We'll chant verse number 55. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prajahati Yada Kamaham, Prajahati Yada Kamaham, Sarvan Partha Manogatam, Sarvan Partha Manogatam, Atman Yevatmana Tushtaha, Atman Yevatmana Tushtaha, Stita Prajnastadhochyate, Stita Prajnastadhochyate, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prajahati Yada Kamaham, Sarvan Partha Manogatam, Atman Yevatmana Tushtaha, Stita Prajnastadhochyate, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Blessed Lord said, the Blessed Lord replied to Arjuna's questions. Here the Lord answers Arjuna's first question, sthita prajnasya kha bhasha, the general description of a man of steady wisdom. He says, prajahati yada kaman sarvam partha manogatan atmanye vatmana tushtaha sthita prajnas tadochyate. Now this construction yada and tada, you will see this very often in the Gita. Yada means when, tada means then.
It's cause and effect.
So what we need to understand is, until tada comes, the force of yada continues. Or the force of tada comes into effect only when the force of yada comes to an end. I'll explain myself. You see here, what he says, when one completely casts off, interesting words, kama means desire, sarva, sarvan kama means all desires, manogatan means from the mind, prajahati yada, when one completely casts off, O Partha, O Arjuna, all desires from the mind. Because he is not talking about, when he talks about perfection, please understand this, you cannot attain perfection externally. In the external world, you can never try to find perfection. Remember that example of what happened between Birbal and Akbar. Akbar is supposed to have asked Birbal, after drawing a line on the board, can you make it small without touching it? He drew another bigger line. And automatically the line drawn by Akbar became small. So in the external world, there is no perfection. The perfection is always within. Anybody who tries to attain perfection outside, he'll be only fooling himself. The more you perfect, more imperfections you'll start seeing. The subtler imperfections will surface. So there is no perfection outside. There is only perfection inside. So this is the first thing we learned here. So he says, it is easier to draw the object of your desires externally, and the world may clap their hands and say, oh, what a great man. But that is not what Lord Krishna talks about as Sthita Prajna. What does he say? From the mind, the desires have to be dropped. Means the preoccupations should not be there. He's not saying Sthita Prajna means one who has no occupation. This is what a lot of people misunderstand about spirituality, about Gita. They think, oh, Gita will take you away from occupation. Gita is only talking about rising above your preoccupations. So today our mind is preoccupied with so many desires. In a gross person, the desires are at the material level and physical level. Next level, it is at the emotional level. He might not be bothered about losing money, but relationship, he will be attached. He may not be bothered about relationships also, but he will be bothered about name and fame, intellectual level, opinion of others. One small little opinion going against you, you may feel very, very terrible. You may feel like it's not worth living. So, mind is preoccupied either at the material level or at the physical level or at the emotional level or at the intellectual level, and some people even at the spiritual level. It's become preoccupation. So he says, when your mind completely casts off all the desires, this is condition number one. Condition number two, and is satisfied in the self by the self. Atmani eva atmana tushta. This word eva, when it follows a word, it gives weightage to the word that precedes eva. Atmani eva means alone, only. You understand? When one is satisfied in the self by the self only, then comes. So what are the two conditions that he talks about?
All desires.
When all the desires are completely cast off from the mind, when the mind is totally free and is happy within. In other words, the difference between us and Siddha Prajna is our happiness comes from outside. The material wealth that we possess, the bank balance, the jewelry, the neighborhood, the health, and then the comfort, the relationships, the name, fame, power, position, etc. As long as these things are there, we are happy. When they are removed, we become unhappy. So we are having happiness dependent on the world. In his case, his happiness is derived from within. It's not dependent on the world. Like Swamiji gives this example. In fact, I think it is given by Swami Ramthika, I think so. He talks about a man when he is walking through a jungle, he is chased by a wild animal. So he climbs a tree and is sitting on the branch, and this wild animal is waiting down because it knows this fellow can't sit on the tree for long. So it's waiting down for this guy to come down. And the branch is not able to take his weight, and it's bending. And it's bending towards a river that is flowing. And from the river, there's a crocodile which is opening its mouth to swallow this guy when he falls. And then there is a snake that is trying to come towards him to sting him, bite him. This is the condition in which he is sitting. On the same branch, there's a bird that is perched. On the same branch on which this guy is sitting, is a bird that is perched. Now, compare the mental condition of the bird and the man. Bird is not in stress. Why? Because it has got wings. If the branch breaks, it can fly away, it can take off. Whereas the man has not got. So sthita prajna does not mean you leave and go externally, but inside you have got that freedom, not dependent on the external world. So how do you judge your spiritual evolution? You judge your spiritual evolution not by your clothes, not by the external possessions. It is to be judged by your dependence. So self-sufficiency is the mark of a man or a woman who is evolving. To be dependent on the external world is against spirituality. To be independent, mentally free from the external world, is spirituality. So he says, when one completely casts off his desires from the mind and is satisfied in the self by the self. Satisfied in the self by the self means aloneness, not loneliness. Today, if you are left alone at home, you feel lonely because you are not happy without company. We are, you know, especially with technology, more and more we become dependent. It becomes so difficult to be independent of our mobile phones also, isn't it? So therefore, when one completely casts off or part of all desires of the mind and is satisfied in the self by the self, he's talking about the principle of attachment also here. In the sense, unless you get attached to the higher, you cannot be detached from the lower. The process of growth is what? You keep your right foot firmly on the upper rung of the ladder, and then you can remove the left foot from the lower rung when you are climbing up. Isn't it? So, how do you rise above the desire? You don't give up your desires. You take up something higher. When you establish yourself in the higher, then the lower gives you up. You don't give it up. Like when you were in toy world, you were exposed to the higher realm. Then slowly when you got established in the higher Lilam, the Thai world gave you up. You did not give up the Thai world. And this is called as Sthita Prajna. By constantly striving and establishing oneself in the higher, the lower objects become loses its efficacy over him. That's what it means. So, therefore, when do you become a Sthita Prajna? When you get established with the self within. In other words, when the awareness of the self intensifies and you attain freedom from the external objects. The objects outside makes no difference to your inside happiness. State of happiness doesn't change. Whether you are added with some more material benefits or some material benefits you are taken away, it makes no difference to you. So, you must understand the difference between aloneness and loneliness. Loneliness is a state of dependency. Aloneness is not a state of dependency. It's not that you are dependent on being left alone. Then that is loneliness also. In a way. Lot of people that say, my God, please just leave me alone. Please just leave me alone doesn't mean he is Sthita Prajna. He is not able to stand the crowd. So in Bhajagavita Madhi Sankara says, Yogaratova Bogaratova. Sangaratova Sangavihina. Whether you are in yoga or in bhoga, whether you are in company or without company, bereft of company, crowd, you should be happy. Yogaratova, Bogaratova, Sangaratova, Sangavihina, Yasya Brahmani Ramate Chittam, Nandati, Nandati, Nandateva. So, where is he getting the happiness from? It's coming from the awareness of the self. Like I said, your mind is constantly running after the pairs of opposites. Now, the question should be asked is, who is it that is craving for success? Who is it that is trying to avoid failure? Constantly, what are we engaged in? Courting success, avoiding failure. So, how do you bring back your mind to the Atma within by asking this question? Who is it? Now, today the question that intellect is asking is what? How I can become successful? How I can avoid failure? What is the question that the intellect should be asking? Who is it that is craving for success? Who is it that is trying to avoid failure? That slowly, slowly takes you back to the Atma. So then when you get established in the Atma within, to the extent you have rooted yourself in the Atma within, to that extent, the external objects adding up or leaving you makes no difference to you. Remember, to the extent you have gone within, to that extent you are free from the without. So you are not supposed to give up anything right now. You are only supposed to allot some time for your sadhana and slowly try to get to the roots. And when you establish, then the lower will fall by itself. Now, what does fall by itself mean? What it means is you will not turn against them. Oh, I can't stand the material wealth. If anybody talks like that, he has not risen above it. A lot of people, they think, oh, he can't stand money. What a great spiritual person. That is not spirituality. You should be comfortable in money. You should be comfortable without it.
Basically, the importance is reduced.
Basically, be indifferent to it.
Yeah, detached. Indifferent word is little misleading.
Detached. Doesn't matter whether it's there.
Yeah, the importance is not that great.
See, you understand it like this. You know the value of an object, but you don't have the value for that object. And you have the right value, that is, this object is something that is perishable. Something that is perishable will have a beginning and an end. So when it had a beginning, I am not going to get excited. When it had an end, I am not going to get disturbed. So I am not going to develop an aversion. When somebody has an aversion towards the material objects of this world, doesn't mean he is a Siddha Prajna. He is comfortable with or without. He is satisfied in the self by the self. His satisfaction is coming from the self within, not from the external objects. So in other words, it is not getting rid of the possessions. It is getting rid of the possessiveness within. Giving up possessions are easy. Getting rid of possessiveness is not easy. So sthita prajna means self-sufficiency. So therefore we say self-sufficiency is not only a state, it is also sadhana. Only to the extent you have attained self-sufficiency, to that extent you are a spiritual person. So now what are we supposed to do? How do we attain self-sufficiency? By trying to imbibe self-sufficiency. So in the areas where you can try not to be dependent on others, you continue. It's not that you should be averse to taking help. See, please understand, in this world, external level may, he's not talking about external independence. External level, we are all interdependent. This is to be understood clearly. You require a car, you require a vehicle, you require a mode of transportation, you are dependent on your legs. There are so many things, external level, interdependent. So legs are dependent on the hands to feed the legs. So external level, we are all interdependent. But inside level, we should achieve that state of self-sufficiency. So what we are not saying, you should be averse to taking help. Where you must take others' help, you must understand the interdependency and then take the help joyfully. But where all you can practice self-sufficiency, you must start doing it. You might have servants at home, but still, when you are not really busy or anything, you try to do your work. Just because you are a servant doesn't mean you should be dependent on them. You should not be averse to taking their help. But there are moments when you are free, so you do it yourself. So in other words, when you have self-sufficiency, if for whatever reason tomorrow the servant is not there, because one of the questions that majorly everybody is asking is how to handle the servants. Because if I say something, then they may leave. And to get another servant is not easy. Who is, you know, because once you get a servant who works well, but he may not be loyal. If he is loyal, he may not be working well. And this person, you know, fairly okay. So this is, oh, we can't say anything. They'll leave. In other words, you are completely from morning till night dependent on so many things. Servants. And the worst thing is opinion of others. You lack self-sufficiency. You lack self-assessment. If you had self-assessment, somebody praising you to skies will make no difference to you. Because you know, okay, they are only seeing the good side of me. They don't know the bad things within me. Somebody is criticizing you. Okay, they are not seeing the full picture. They are only seeing the half picture. What they want to see. So if you had self-assessment, why do you, you know, get tossed up by others' opinion. We don't do self-assessment. We don't have self-sufficiency whatsoever at any level. Physical level, material level, emotional level, intellectual level. At all levels. Like they talk about the peer pressure. Why do anybody get into peer pressure?
To be accepted in society or to be accepted by your friends.
I think everyone
at some level falls under peer pressure.
It's not peer pressure of doing something, it's a peer pressure of not doing something. It's a peer pressure of being aloof from certain things. It's a peer pressure of saying that, okay, you know, I've reached this level, I need to give up things. It's a peer pressure of different sorts at different stages of life.
Few ladies have spoken to me about the peer pressure they have for the handbags. Okay? Not to talk about something more. Just the handbags. Peer pressure is at all level only to people who lack a purpose, who lack the attitude of giving. If I understand my purpose is to give and I am in the school, if a student understands I am in the school to strengthen myself and life is to give and that's my purpose, then what all are required for me? If a mobile phone is required, then I buy it. Not because everybody has a mobile phone. With reference to my pursuit, with reference to my purpose, with reference to my goal. So people lack a goal, people lack a sense of direction, a purpose. They don't understand that life is to give. And that's why this peer pressure comes. So if you had intellect and understood the purpose of life, if you had a purpose, then you say, okay, they may have a purpose, so therefore they have these mobile phones. I don't have a purpose. Therefore, I don't need a mobile phone. Or I be, well, maybe not the mobile phone, not the sophisticated one. But just because somebody, you know, judges you based on what you have, otherwise you are eliminated from the group, you are not accepted into that group. You are, in other words, you lack direction, you lack a purpose. So this is what it means. Pitch up a goal.
It's more about not being secure with it.
Yes. You see, if you had a goal, if you had the attitude of giving, then there is the question of getting into peer pressure. So this insecurity is what? You are a taker. So you want to be accepted by the group. You are wanting something. If you are there as a giver, you can never get into peer pressure. Nobody who is selfish can be secure, can feel secure. Nobody who is unselfish will feel insecure. This is the law. I can't change it, you can't change it. A person who has the attitude of giving, contributing, never feels insecure. It's only the person who is having the attitude of taking. When he meets somebody, he is constantly scheming and planning how he can benefit from this, rather than how we can mutually benefit. What I can do for him, and then what I have learned from this experience, what I take back. The focus should be, if it's in giving, then no sense of insecurity. No need for you to be accepted. Because you are there, this moment is there to give. Now I have a purpose. I am going to school to study, to gain this knowledge, to strengthen myself so that I can contribute. And when I strengthen myself, all these things will come to me. So that person will not get into peer pressure. What is the purpose of studying? Why do we go to school to get educated? You must stop and ask that question. What is the purpose of education? If you ask this question, what is the purpose of education? How can you get into peer pressure? Everybody is cramming and trying to come first. From, I'm told from 6th standard onwards nowadays, IIT preparation starts. IIT preparation from 6th standard.
Really?
More so in South India.
South is very hard.
Yeah. The peer pressure. Now nobody stops and questions what is the purpose of education. The movie that came, not Three Idiots, it's talking about it. Nobody stops and asks this question. So peer pressure can be handled only when you ask your question, what is my purpose? Why am I born here? Why am I born here means not necessarily only in the world. Why am I born in this group? Why have I come here? What is the purpose? What is it I can do for this group? You know, so if this is how your focus is, then where is the question of getting into peer pressure? So self-sufficiency ought to be practiced at whatever level you can practice also. So then where is the question of getting affected when your servant has not turned in? Driver has not come. So wherever possible, we must put in our effort and try to become self-sufficient. You get up and go and get a glass of water for yourself. And if the doorbell rings, you get up and open the door. Don't wait for the servants to come and open it. So this is how you have to develop spirituality at the external level also, slowly. So that's why I said these verses are not only talking about the state of sthita prajna, it's also talking about the sadhana. So one of the most important sadhana is self-sufficiency. You can start at the external level, then slowly at the internal level it comes. To be able to absorb the shock, to be self-sufficient. That's why I say, even if you have questions, struggle with it. Don't straight away ask. Try to struggle with it. Then when it becomes too much for you, then you ask. As much as possible, try to become self-sufficient. Not that you should be averse to taking help, like I said. That is not self-sufficiency. Refusing to take help is not is ego. Self-sufficiency is not ego. You must differentiate between the two. Otherwise, you will confuse yourself. So when these two conditions are fulfilled, when your mind is free, when the preoccupations are not there, why? Because of your establishment in the higher values, the self within, then you are a sthita prajna. So what is the focus here? The focus is upon taking up the higher, not giving up anything at all. This is what we need to understand. Bhagavad Gita will not tell you to give up anything. It simply encourages you to take up the higher, and when you take up the higher, you become mentally free from the lower. you will not become mentally averse to the lower. Remember this. I am emphasizing this again and again, because a lot of people become averse to the lower. When you become spiritual, you develop more love. There is no question of becoming averse. There is no question of developing hatred. There is no question of becoming judgmental. You in fact start accepting things as they are. That is love. So therefore, your relationships will become much more stronger, because it will be filled with love and not lust. So completely cast off desires from the mind means lust is gone. The craving is gone. As a result of experiencing the completeness within. The person who is focused more upon all that has been provided with, he is filled with love and the attitude of giving. His action will turn itself into a service. A person who turns his attention upon all the things that he lacks, then he will become lustful. He will be complaining and lustful. He would want to grab as much as he can. And that's the difference. So Siddha Prajna means one who has attained the completeness within, as a result of which his mind is absolutely free and filled with love. So when the mind is free, it's filled with love. To the extent the mind is not free, to that extent it is filled with lust. And lust disturbs the relationships. Lust creates the friction, not the love. He is only contributing, there is no zero expectation. So when one completely, this is very important, completely casts off the desires from the mind, it is to do with the inner perfection, nothing to do with external. Then one is said to be a man of steady wisdom. Because he is rooted, he has seen the higher, having seen the higher, the lower falls apart. Like when a flower matures into a fruit, the petals of the flower fall away. By plucking the petals, it doesn't become a fruit. But when it matures and becomes a fruit, the petals fall away. So never ever focus on giving up. Always focus upon taking up something higher. When you get satiated with taking up, when you are full, paripurna feeling, then automatically the craving leaves, wanting leaves.
It's a beautiful example. This is a very beautiful, it's so...
Yeah. So you know, so when the person becomes more and more conscious, desires, lust leaves the person. It's when you are unconscious of the self that the lust takes over. Like they say, somebody said something out of anger, so don't take it seriously. But I would say take that seriously, because that is when the person was drunk with anger. Therefore, he was not pretending. His true feelings were vented out. We are all living in this world like we all live in the lounge. Your lounge is always kept clean. not necessarily the inside rooms. You go to somebody's house, the lounge is very nicely kept. Some of the best things are put there, very nice it is. Similarly, at the conscious level, we are all, hello, how are you, everything nice, it's a lounge. So, when alcohol goes in, the fellow speaks. You understand? Then the real person comes out. When the anger brings out something, it's bringing out what is in his subconscious. So, that is why they say this alcohol and all these things are non-spiritual, in the sense they tend to take away your awareness. When the awareness is gone, then the lust takes over. What a person would probably not do in a normal condition, he might do it. So, the more you gain awareness, all the loads will slowly leave you. That's why I give you this example constantly, that negative only can be developed in the dark room. If you expose the negative to light, cannot be developed. So the lust, the desire, the craving, the wanting, everything comes because of lack of awareness of the self. The more we gain the awareness of the self, slowly all these things will leave you. So therefore this is emphasizing on taking up the higher. Work for a higher goal. Channelize your emotions towards the higher. Dedicate your intellect for the self-inquiry. Thus, when your body, mind and intellect are dedicated for taking up of the higher, then slowly all these things leave you. By telling the fellow, all these are anyway passing, fleeting, nothing happens. He also knows it is passing fleeting. But he is not established. And to establish yourself, you have to follow this Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga. By following these three, you go on establishing yourself. That is why we say, as you are in the process of establishing yourself, if you slip and fall, doesn't matter. What is important is being in the path. Slip and fall doesn't matter. Get up and continue. Swamiji gives this example of, if you fall, fall like a rubber ball, not as a lead plate.
Not as a
lead plate. The lead plate will fall and settle down there. A rubber ball will bounce back. So it doesn't matter, you are pursuing the path to the self, you are trying to increase the awareness, the intensity of awareness within, and you may slip. Doesn't matter.
Is it because of the rubber ball, the harder it falls, the harder it rises? It is not rises, yeah. No, but it even, like, if it falls really hard, it even bounces back with that same intensity, right?
Yeah.
Is that why the rubber ball is taken specifically?
Yeah, basically to bounce back. That's what the meaning is there. So you don't stay for, because sometimes what happens, I struggled, but you know, it didn't, I failed. What's the point here? Doesn't matter. You know, when a sadhak goes and asks the guru, I'm studying the scriptures but I'm still getting angry. He says, no, you are progressing. Why? Because earlier also you were getting angry, but you were not aware. Now you are aware of your anger. This is a progress. And who said that when you are progressing, anger will not come? The release will happen more intensively. You will see. All this while it was there, but you were not seeing. But now you become more conscious of your jealousy, lust, avarice, greed, anger, ego, all that. So therefore, to be spiritual is not easy, because spirituality will make you more uncomfortable. That's why I believe Swamiji said, you know, one fellow wrote a letter. saying that, Swamiji, I was a very happy man until I met you. Because the scriptures, the focus is more upon yourself, you know.
Is there anything like positive anger?
Positive anger means?
Positive anger.
No, you can use the words. Positive anger means we say like, use your temper, never lose your temper. It's not anger when you use your temper, though we use the same term, anger. See, anger is when you are unconscious. When you are conscious, it's not anger. Anger is a reaction, not a response. So, the focus here he is talking about is getting established in the higher. We'll conclude.
So, what did you say? Anger is a
reaction, not a response. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.